Mr. Wilkinson, Rail 2. You're at Bransworth Camp, Mr. Wilkinson, and been issued with your uniform and in your barracks. And keeping it clean, which we've talked about, how did you keep the stove clean? Because obviously they were pretty keen on that.
You just brushed it, that was all. They didn't black lead it or nothing like that. You just brushed it and kept it light when it was cool.
And cleaned out every morning if you had?
Yes, it was cleaned out every morning. And whenever you poked it, the ash went into a little container and then you emptied that outside into a sort of bin.
Where were the latrines in relation to the hooks?
It was a big camp, you see, and there was a lot of latrines. And there was also, there was a big naffy there, and they had toilets as well. So you had plenty of latrines to go to.
Washing areas where you could wash?
Washing areas. They were like a hut with two rows of wash basins, and then they had shower cubicles.
And these would be close to your hut so you could get to them?
Yeah, they were spread out, pardon me, there was a few knocking about. But, there's nothing else you could say about that, because as I said, there was plenty of wash basin, plenty of, there was a big square.
It was a large camp.
Yeah, it was a large camp.
And you mentioned there was naffy and guardroom, as you've mentioned, of course.
Yeah, the guardroom was at the far end on the way out.
Was it a Durham Light Infantry camp only at this time?
Yes.
Later on, another regiment came in.
Did it? I don't know.
I think later the Duke of Wellington's came in, but it was later on.
No, I don't know.
So we were all Durham Light Infantry at that time.
Yeah.
What time was reveille?
Reveille was about 7 o'clock in the morning, as far as I can remember.
And the first thing you did?
First thing we did was get washed, shaved, and put our uniforms on, of course. And then after breakfast, you would have your first parade.
And what time would breakfast be?
Breakfast would be about 8 o'clock.
And did you march to the dining hall?
No, you made your way.
And in the dining hall itself, was it cafeteria? Did you line up or were you sitting at tables?
Well, you had people serving and you just went with your mess tins and went along the line, took what you wanted. They gave it to you. So.
What was the food like you were getting?
It was all right. It was as good as some were getting anyway, civilians.
Do you recall it, the kind of thing you got for breakfast?
Well, I wouldn't remember that. It's not important.
No. Typical English breakfast kind of thing.
Yeah.
Bacon, eggs.
Sausage,
bacon,
or whatever.
And, of course, then you would eat your meal, and then you'd make your own way back.
We'd eat the meal, then we'd wash our mess tins. And,
what were the washing facilities for the mess tins?
Well, you had a few sinks you used to wash them. That was near the dining room, you see, so you just went after your meal, washed your gear, knife, fork and spoon.
Then you say make your way back, and then you had your first parade. What might that have been?
It would be teaching your marching and things like that. And then later on, when you got more service in, you'd be taught arms, dismantling arms and put them together.
So if we can come to the very initial down, you're a civilian as of a few hours, and now you have to take the very initial drill, which was presumably marching, saluting.
Marching in place.
How did they teach it? How was it actually taught to you?
Well, they put you in threes, and then they dressed you, which dressing is putting yourself an arm's length from the next one, and in line. Then, once you're getting used to being dressed and taking steps forward and steps backward, and then you'd be told to march. And some made mistakes, some didn't. Till he got it right, you keep on shoving your own. I know I've heard of tales where they've had rough NCOs, but fortunately I never did. I enjoyed being taught.
Do you remember the name of your NCOs at that time?
No.
But they treat you well?
Uh-huh.
Were they old First World War kind of age soldiers that were training you?
They were vets from Dunkirk in the main. There's a lot of dogs in Dunkirk, you see. And they came round to instruct those that were capable of it anyway.
They would presumably demonstrate to you first of all what to do, and then you'd do it. Was that the routine?
Unless they had it, a drill sergeant would never drill yourself. What you'd do, you'd have a corporal, and the corporal would show you slope arms, the order arms, present arms, this sort of thing, and he'd keep ordering you to do it, so that eventually you learned how to do it properly. But everything that was necessary was taught.
And did you do the drills to numbers?
Yes, 1, 2, 3.
Initially? So you got the timing right?
Yes. Everything had to be right. In the main it worked pretty well.
Were you taught light infantry pace from the very beginning? Straight from the beginning, no build-up to it?
No, 140, 27 inch.
You must have found that hard in the beginning.
No, I could run like the wind. Uh-huh. I was a very good runner. And I used to enjoy running. But 140, it's a bit strong if you're trained for 120. But once you get used to 140, 120 is hard. So that's just the way it is. You get used to one thing. But I won the 3 mile twice, you know.
In the camp?
For the Durhams, yeah.
Is sport a very important part of a soldier's training?
I always like sport, yeah. But you had the choice of whether you wanted to do it or not. It was voluntary. But they got ample numbers for all the sports. There was always somebody that wanted to do it. So.
The drill sergeant, the drill NCOs, would be no doubt shouting at you. How did you take to army language?
Well, it was all right with me. I mean, I've been working on the pit, so...
So you're used to it?
Yeah. The only thing that was wrong that I can remember that was wrong when I was in the depot was Sergeant Major got into trouble for telling nappy little girls to open their legs. But... you know, it's all the same as I was looking to be anyway.
Do you remember his name?
No, I don't.
But this would sweep through the camp?
Yeah. He'd had the ATS on parade, you know, and he told him to open their legs, which wasn't very good. Not for women anyway.
Well, after the initial drill and you're beginning to march, what was the next thing they taught you?
Well, you see, once I'd finished that, I did guards, and they were hard. They used to carry you onto a spot and put you down, and everything, the officer came and examined you.
So you would get yourself all cleaned up, or bulled up, as they say,
yeah.
And then so that you didn't kind of get dirty, I think, they carried you to a spot, didn't they?
Yeah.
And this was your own squad, presumably?
No, you were detailed for guard. And... so many from each lot. And what happened was, you'd go to the detail board and you'd say that you were on guard at night. And you'd have your stuff pulled, and you'd get a couple of the lads to carry you, place you on a spot, because there was painted spots on the playground, and they'd put you there. And He had to move to the audiologist's room. He'd bring it to attention, then he'd examine you. Then sometimes some of them were bad, some of the officers were bad. They used to strip you down so they couldn't find a fault with you. And the Naki girls was at the edge of the parade ground, and they used to see if you had no holes in your stomach, and take your shoes off and everything, and they'd gotten the bother of placing you on a spot, and if you couldn't find a fault with you, they would probably one or two pipper, and he would start to strip you down to try and find a fault with you.
These were the worst of the officers, as you said.
Yeah.
They weren't all like that.
No.
Do you recall the name of any officer that was like that at the depot?
Not really, no. I know Ted Short came there as a single pipper. I don't know where he went from there, mate.
I think actually he stayed most of his time there as an education officer.
Did he?
So you're on guard, you're highly polished and clean and so forth. And did they look at the studs in your boots to see
yes.
if they were polished?
You had one missing, you know, because you were doing light infantry.
I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah. You see, that you had, that might not be quite correct in this, but for figuring, you had places for 13 studs, and you had 12, you had one missing in a certain place, and they knew that you were doing light infantry by your boots. I think that's all there was about uniform. When you were on guard, some of the...
we're still talking about the guards, actually. So when you passed the parade aspect of the guard, what happened next?
They marched you to the guard room, and then they would place whatever guards they wanted, two, three, or whatever, or single, whatever, and the rest would go into the guard room, and... they would just keep changing. The sergeant would come out and change it, and the guards that had been on would go into the barracks, stay there till they needed again. They would just keep changing them.
From the guardhouse to outside, or guard room to outside.
Yeah.
What were you guarding?
As far as I'm concerned, the barrack.
You weren't on the main gate, were you?
Yes.
On the main gate.
Yeah.
And how long did the guard last? What time, for example, would you
24 guard.
Starting from what time?
Well, probably be about 4 o'clock. I can't remember exactly.
In the afternoon, late afternoon, through till the following...
you'd be overnight. Going to keep chasing around.
How did they work it so that you would have presumably had so much time on and so much time off?
Yeah. Well, what you would get, you see, there would normally be, if it was three guards... there'd be nine, and the NCOs. And you'd be four off to one, that sort of thing. Each one would get the same amount of guard.
And did the orderly officer come popping around occasionally, unannounced?
I nearly shot one of the orderly officers. I was on guard, and he came from behind the hut and shouted at me. And my answer to him was a bullet up the spout and after him. But fortunately, I didn't hit him. But I could have very well hit him. If I'd had more experience, I would have hit him. And it would have been his own fault.
Did some, all of the officers try to catch you out on guard in this way?
No, some couldn't care less. Especially the old ones that have been in action. They wouldn't. Because it seems pointless to go after a sentry, your own sentry, and probably get killed yourself. But some people were aware of that, and these young two pippers and one pippers, they weren't up to it.
We had taught the challenge for anyone appearing.
You had your password and the reply. You were taught all that, but didn't always work it.
And presumably when the officer came, you'd all have to come out the guard room irrespective of what...
No, unless he called for us.
Oh, unless he called you out.
Mm. If he came, you see, you would stop him. And if he, when everything was in order, if he came up to you and said, call out the guard, then he called out the guard. If not, he just went away and had his belly. So...
When you completed the 24-hour guard, did you have the next day off to recover?
Sometimes, not always. Sometimes you'd go on to fatigues, or you'd go on to drill, or whatever. But, of course, I only did 3 months.
Did you have a stick man chosen on the guard
yes,
at this time?
Yeah. Yes, you had the stick if you passed. The orderly officer. The
smartest person on
yeah,
the guard.
You got a stick. Swagger stick. Yeah.
And what would you do for the rest of the guard as a stick man? What was the other
guard? As a stick man, you had to work. Because you got the stick on the guard, and when your guard was finished, you had gone back to your billet, you see, as a stick guard. You had that guard off. But the next day you had to work and they were asleep. So, it's just 6 and 2/3, just a matter of giving them something. You had to hand the swagger stick back anyway, so it's not a thing like the sword that you get and keep.
I forgot to ask you, had you a medical when you went into the forces?
Yes, I
did. Was it what you call a good medical or one of these cursory things that just glanced at you and said you look fit enough?
He felt us in different parts. And looked at us in different parts, but it wasn't an examination that you would a thorough examination. But it was enough. If you were fit enough, you were fit.
Had you inoculations?
Yes, but not then. I had them later.
Came later. We talked about the drill immediately after breakfast time. Did you have a morning break?
If it was ordinary drills, yes, you'd get a break. Unless you had a sergeant that wanted to go out here, he'd carry on shouting until you get this right, you're going to stop on the square and stuff like that. But it never bothered me.
And if you had this mid-morning break, what did it comprise of?
Go to the nappy and have a drink of tea or coffee or whatever. It was mainly tea then, because there wasn't that much coffee about.
How much were they paying you as a young recruit?
Well, you got 7 shillings, and 7 shillings going home to your mum.
And you had no choice in that? That was split by the army?
Yeah.
Barragrum damages, did they come out of your 7 shillings?
They come out of 7 shillings, and clean materials out of it.
So you hadn't a great deal of money left over?
No, we had very little money.
How did you feel about barracks damages? Because
everybody hated them. But it all depends on the NCO. They used, even if you some of them, even if you hadn't done any damages, you got damages. So you had to pay for them.
And you couldn't contest them. You couldn't say.
No. You wouldn't dare.
After the break, between mid-morning break and dinner time, what might you be doing then?
We'd carry on with training of one means or another, and that would finish about 4 o'clock.
Yeah, that'd be right way through to 4 o'clock. Yeah. Dinner time, what break did you get for that?
You got about an hour at dinner time.
And the same process, you made your own way to the...
Yeah, clean your gear and then go to your barracks and put them away and then... come for the next detail, told you what you were doing next.
Substantial meals, were they? The dinner?
They were enough, yeah. I think everything was all right. But you see, I always stood up with the attitude, I was a volunteer. And that makes a difference. I volunteered to get in for 3 years under my age.
Yeah, I was going to ask you later on about that, and so I will come to that later on when we discuss the type of people you were with. If we just could finish this this drill down, this active day. So through to 4 o'clock again, you'd be doing some form of drilling or whatever. At 4 o'clock, what happened?
4 o'clock, you went and you got ready. If you had a pass to go out the barracks, then you got a pass out. If not, you just went to the naffy. And most of the night you spent in the naffy.
Did you have to spend a period of time confined to the camp before you were allowed out?
Yes, but it wasn't all that much. They weren't that strict on it. I suppose the regulars would be. We weren't.
Where would you go locally for a night?
Go to Brunswick or Durham, or you wouldn't go very far because you had the money to go very far.
How did the civilians in the area treat you?
Well, they were all right. They were nice people, especially Brunswick. They used to speak to you, and they didn't ignore you, not like a lot of places. They were nice.
And whilst you were out for the evening, what did that mean? Did you go to pubs or whatever?
Well, I didn't, because I didn't drink, so...
Of course, I'm forgetting you were underage. Did you tend to find yourself staying in camp and going to the naffy more than going out?
Sometimes we did. It all depends. We couldn't go out more than once a week anyway. I mean, even if you wanted a packet of sweets, I know they were cheap, but it had to come out of your money.
If you stayed on in camp, you've already mentioned the fact that you'd spend a great deal of evenings cleaning and preparing for the next day. Was it a harmonious group of people you found yourself with? Did you get on well with them?
Well, I was very fortunate. Never had any rogues, never had any bad people that I know of. I never had anything stolen all right from our lads all the time I was with them. Never.
No bullies amongst them?
No.
Horse play, did they get up to pranks in the...
Well, some of them did, but I wasn't one for pranks, I was too straight-laced. And it's rather strange, I know I was young, but I wouldn't let them away with anything.
And as you say, you're pretty well made and done boxing, so you could handle yourself.
Yeah. Yes.
Was there any gambling that went on in the hut? Off duty?
There was. I had tombola and things like that, and cards, rag and what have you.
And you didn't get involved with that, did you?
No. Well, we weren't allowed cards at home. My father was dead against gambling, and he wouldn't allow us to play cards. We hadn't have a pack of cards in the house. So it's always been, even now, you see, I can't play cards as a result.
Did the army not frown upon gambling in the billets?
Well, it was done on the quiet anyway, so I wouldn't know whether they frowned on it or not. I suppose they would if somebody was getting into debt. But you see, there was the camp commandant was in charge of your pay, so he saw that you didn't spend so much, and eventually you were responsible for your own pay.
Do you remember who was commanding the camp?
No. I can't even remember the names. The only one I can remember is Major Robinson, Commander Robo.
He was there?
Yeah. Not at the camp, he was in the army.
Later on?
He was in charge of West Company.
Okay, we've talked about drills and marching and the pace that you marched, of course. Weapon training, what were done then?
Well, it depends. Sometimes you would go on the bayonet train, charging a sandbag, you know, and guard pass through.
And presumably you'd have to scream, and
yeah,
they encourage you to do that?
I always did that, all right. You don't do it, no matter as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I have been at one or two.
I was going to ask you, did you ever use the bayonet? Because many soldiers never used it.
Yes, I did.
Put it on, but didn't use it.
Yeah.
So that came as an experience later on. Mm-hmm. And was it a part of the series training? They went in for a lot of bayonet training, did they?
Well, you've got it quite often, because it's a funny thing, you know, even when you're doing it for real, because you've got to run and keep that straight in you like that.
Got swaying side to side.
Yeah.
What's the thinking behind that?
It's not thinking, you just can't avoid it.
That's right, because with you moving, with you running, it does move, yeah.
And you see, I mentioned that I was in special service for a while. Well, there, Captain Black, he was an ex-police officer, and he was a jiu-jitsu expert. Now, I was just a laddie, and he got me on, run up a bank with a bayonet, naked bayonet, not sheathed at all. And he got me up. Three times he got me up, run at him, and he was tipping me up, because it's easy. You might not think it is, but it's dead easy. It's just a matter of balance. And when you're running, you're out of balance. So he got me twice through us. The third time, I stopped the yard from him.
With the butt.
How he went down. So when he come to, he gave me such a hand, and he was laughing all the time. But I put him out. And I says to him, after he'd given us a hiding leg, I says to him, you know, if we'd been on active service, you would have congratulated me on doing that to an enemy. I says, you expected me to just carry on and you could throw me about. I says, that throwing about hurts, you know. And I said, the reason that I stopped short and turned it and hit you with a butt was because you weren't expecting it. I says, I've never seen anybody that has done that with a butt end and you've been able to throw them. You can throw them because he's out of balance. I says, now hit you because you weren't prepared.
You said he gave you a hiding. What do you mean by that? What did he do to you?
Well, you know, it was about it.
He actually used his hands on you.
Yeah.
And you accepted that because that, under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
We'll come back. We'll be coming to that stage in your career, in your experience. Other than brain training, what other training did they give you? I'm thinking in terms of gas precautions. Did you do the gas mask training?
I only did that twice, I think, in the whole of my army career. What
did that entail? What did they
just
do?
Going into a hut and then you open a canister and you'd have to stay there for so many seconds. But nothing really. I know it's a bit choking like, but you're not in it long enough. It's not as though it's weird.
Route marches. Did you gradually build up the distances that you marched?
Yeah, you had to.
And did they start very early in your training?
Yes. They used to take you on route marches regularly because that's part of the things that you have to do. I mean, even in action, you have to march sometimes, quite often.
But this wouldn't be at 140 pace, route marching?
Oh, yes. Not route marching, that's 120.
You drop it down?
Yeah. Your route march at 120, but when you're coming near the barracks, then you change your pace to 140. And away you go.
What kind of mileage were you marching?
Well, the biggest march I did was in Iraq, actually, 100 mile and forced march. And it's come in other times, but you'd want that later on, I suppose.
Yes, but say for the first long distance or route march they give you, and you're not used to it, how far would that be? Do you?
Oh, 5-10 miles.
And what did you carry with you?
You carried your gun, 50 rounds of ammunition, sometimes, and your pack, and your water bottle, and so forth. But on a long march, even a professional soldier, just the same, you'll get 10 minutes rest every hour. Especially when you're force marching, you still have to have that 10 minutes. Because I've seen people, the blood running out of the boots. Because whether it's badly fitting boots or what, I don't know.